104.3 The Fan presents The Drive.
You did it again. You got through work. Way to go. Congratulations. You get outside. Look at this incredible day we have here. Just absolutely beautiful. So we thank you for listening. We appreciate it. It's DMAC with Nate Jackson. Herm Edwards will join us here shortly. Promise. John Elway spent an extra day in Arizona, Nate, because ASU had their pro day. And pretty smart by Herm Edwards to help out his guys, knowing that the NFL meetings were down there. So they waited very specifically for this day to make it a bit easier for the GMs and such to just chill out and make a little short drive from Scottsdale over to Tempe to check out their guys. And one of their big guys, they got two guys that have the Broncos' interest. Rennell Wren, who's a big 320 nose tackle interior sort of dude, just one of these big old dudes. He's one of them. And N'Keal Harry, who is a wide receiver, who is in the Demaryius Thomas mold. Big, thick, strong, maybe not, you know, burner sort of fast. And N'Keal is coming out early. He had another year left. So, which is interesting because he's not a slam dunk first round sort of guy. So do you come out early if you're not like just like you're a top 15 guy, you know? What do you do?
I think if you feel ready, and he's got a coach in Herm Edwards who knows what it's like at the next level and knows if he's ready, and if he gets his blessing, I think you should do it, especially if you're healthy and you got some momentum going. He's got the size, 6'4", 215 type of guy. That's perfect for the NFL. And, you know, if he's feeling it, do it. Because you can have a catastrophic injury at any time. At any time. Could end your career. And, you know, he could go from whatever he's going to be, first, second rounder, to if he had an injury next year in college, fourth or fifth. So, I say go for it.
And then it's like, well, is this a priority for the Broncos? Tricky question. What weapons does Joe Flacco need?
He needs a tight end, and he needs some receivers.
We had Jake Butt on earlier today. Did anything you heard from Jake Butt give you more faith that he may recover and be able to be a factor this year? Is it still kind of a wait and see sort of deal?
Well, Jake said all the right things. He's got a great attitude, and technically speaking, he understands why his knees were prone to tear. And if what he said is true, and I'm sure it is, then they fixed the problem. And so, yeah, as long as he stays with his rehab and commits himself to it. But he was also right to say we could use another good tight end too, because they're going to do a lot of two tight end sets.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are one of those guys in the tight end room is going to get hurt during the season. That's mm-hmm. how it always goes.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to have serviceable guys ready to step right in and not miss a beat. That's what all backups aspire to be, just as good, if not better, than the guys in front of them.
Yeah, this is where it gets complicated, because if you're going glass half full, having Jake Butt come back is actually amazing, because because of injuries, he hasn't played all that much in the past couple of years. So if you say, "Oh no, dude's good, dude's ready to go," you're like, "Wow, he's a little bit more experienced. He's older, he's stronger. Wow, we spent a fifth round pick on him a couple years ago." Like, Julius Thomas was hurt when he first got here to the Broncos, but once that dude got healthy, he wasn't blocking or anything. Or he wasn't trying as he was blocking. But dude caught passes.
Yeah. Got touchdowns.
24 in 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, step back for a second. Think about that. Julius Thomas, granted Peyton Manning was a quarterback, 24 touchdowns in 2 years.
Each touchdown leads to the next one. Your coaches get more confidence in you.
Stunning, right?
Yeah, your quarterback does. They put you in those positions. They throw you the ball in the red zone. They split you out wide like they do with Gronk.
Right.
That's what you do with these tight ends. And that's what you do with Jake Butt or anybody else who comes in here who has the ball skills to be put out there. I mean, that's what these modern tight ends are there for.
So, okay, hey, that sounds great. If Jake's that guy, why are we drafting a tight end in the first round or second round? Let's go to Tempe, Arizona, where Herm Edwards. Coach, it's Darren McKee, D-Mac with Nate Jackson. Thank you so much for being on with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you guys.
I just want to let you know I am a Sun Devil dad. My son is a sophomore at University House across the street from the Inferno. He's in the 942 crew. He made a Herm Train sign that was on TV constantly last year. So you got a member right here. You got some love here in Colorado, Coach. I just want to let you know that.
I appreciate you. I see those guys on Friday night, those pizzas, you know. I know they, some of them sleep over, but I make sure they get pizza Friday night before the game.
He has done that many times, and that is greatly appreciated. You gotta get in that curtain of distraction, though, Coach. I know you're hesitant to get in that curtain of distraction, but at some point you got to get in the mix.
Yeah, I might have to pull that one off. They're going to ask me. I said, well, I might have to go ahead and do that one time. See what happens.
We're having you on today because I've really, as my money goes, so goes my attention, Coach. So I've been watching N'Keal Harry a lot over the past couple of years. And I've been telling people around here, the best receiver in the country is at Arizona State. And I firmly actually believe that, top to bottom. So can you just tell us your experiences with N'Keal Harry and what makes him special to you?
Well, it goes back to his high school days. I actually coached him in the Underhand All-American game, the one that's played in Orlando. So I got him out of high school when I was the head coach there, obviously. And I think what I've witnessed, just being around him, great work ethic, very, very, ultra competitive. Does not like to lose, competes in everything he does. Very good with the ball in his hand as far as a runner. He runs, when he gets the ball in his hand, he's an excellent runner with the ball. We can talk about the 50-50 balls. With him, it's not 50-50. He's going to win about 90 of those balls that you throw up. He's going to come down with it. A guy that, he loves football. He really does. I mean, he is passionate about the game of football. He's a sponge. He's actually a sponge. He's willing to learn. He reminds me, and I don't like to compare players. Mm-hmm. Because I just think every player is his own uniqueness of who he is. He reminds me a lot of the guy that played in the league. When I say his name, you got to remember. I'm not saying he's going to be that, but he has the attributes of a Dez Bryant. Mm. He really does. A big physical guy, goes up and catches the ball, very competitive. He has those type of traits.
Well, when you say Dez Bryant, of course, here in Denver, Coach, we'll just say Demaryius Thomas, because Demaryius and Dez have been compared to each other so much over the years.
Yeah, Demaryius a little bit bigger in stature. He's a little taller, probably. N'Keal's about 6'2", about 220, somewhere right around there. Similar to Dez. I mean, Dez is about 6'1", probably 6'1.5 at the most, but the way he plays reminds me a lot of Dez.
Did you get a chance to talk with John Elway today about N'Keal Harry and your other guys too, not just N'Keal, but
I did. I visited with John and we go way back. I played against John when he first came in the league. I was in Philadelphia, and I can remember he was a rookie coming in the league. He was one of the first players that actually denied when he was going in the draft, said, "I'm not going there." I said, "Wow, can you do that?" Had a great career, obviously, and played against him and then coached against him when I was at Kansas City. I was involved in that Monday night clash when Joe Montana arrived in Denver, that big Monday night game. And I was a secondary coach back in those days with Marty and those guys. So we had a great talk about some of our players. John Lynch was there, a good friend of the family, obviously. And he played for me in Tampa and, a bunch of other GMs. There was about 7 or 8 GMs there. And they all asked questions about the same guys. And N'Keal's name popped up a bunch.
Coach, this is Nate Jackson. Anything N'Keal needs to work on as far as his game?
Here's the deficiency in most receivers that come out of college that play in somewhat of an RPO system. The routes are signaled from the sideline.
In pro football, it's not that way.
Right.
So the learning curve for all these guys, it's the same way with the quarterback now. I mean, that's the difference in college football. You know, the quarterback actually goes to the huddle.
Right.
In college football, everybody looks at Pinocchio, Mickey Mouse, or whatever picture you have drawn up on the sideline, and there are three other guys giving the wide receivers, you know, signals. And I told the receivers one day when I first took the job, I said, how can you guys ever line up wrong? I said, it's impossible. I said, because you got somebody to tell you what to do and what route to run. So, you know, that's the difference in pro football, that these guys actually have to learn the concepts of routes. But his learning curve is big. I mean, he's going to learn. He's going to be like a sponge. I mean, he's waiting for the opportunity to become a professional football player.
Is there anything as a coach that you can do schematically in the NFL that you can't do in college?
Well, in college, the feeling is a big, big difference in college football,
right?
Because of the wide side of the field and the short side of the field.
Right.
You can do some things in college football that can hinder the quarterback if he's not a strong arm guy. You know, you roll the coverage to the short side of the field and make the guy throw to the wide side of the field. That's a difficult task.
Yeah.
You know, because of the dimensions of the field, the hash marks. That's why in college football, they say you got a boundary side, you got a short side of the field. In the National Football League, the ball is always in the middle.
Right.
And so it's harder sometimes, especially defensively, when they run them RPOs to the field. You know, they outnumber you over there. And you put guys in bigger positions to make plays in space because there's so much room out there. And that's, you know, that's a big difference in college football for the most part.
Tell us about Ronnell Wren, because he may be on the focus not only for the Broncos but a lot of teams. What's tell us about this guy.
Big, powerful guy. Didn't play a lot until we got here. And, you know, I think he's another guy that's a raw, talented guy. Can give you a lot of impressive numbers as far as his ability to rush the passer. He's a powerful guy. I think he still has a lot of football ahead of him to learn. But I just think, you know, that's what's different about, you know, pro football. I mean, if all these guys were ready to play, why would they need a coach, right? So that's,
right.
I mean, one coach can never give a player is talent. What players give them is information. You know, players are information gatherers. You give them knowledge. You teach them fundamentals, techniques, but you don't give them talent. And anytime you have a talented player, you always feel like you can develop it.
Coach, what did you learn about developing a culture by coming back to coaching after watching it so many years? And how important is it to build that legacy and that culture to winning?
Well, I think the culture of winning is in every program. And I don't think ours is so unique, but ours is the pro model. And that took a lot of guys by surprise as far as how are you going to do this? And the first people you have to convince is the coaching staff. Because these guys are college coaches. You know, they believe in, since, you know, we need a three-hour practice. I said, well, after 2 hours, my feet hurt, and I'm gone. If you want to stay out there and practice 3 hours, God bless you, because I'm going in. I mean, we're going to be efficient. We're going to be to the point. I mean, I'm not practicing just to practice now. You know, because you have so many guys in college football, they try to get, you know, everyone reps. And I said, look, guys, I said, the reality of it is this. I said, you're only going to play about 50 guys anyway.
Right.
And I understand you have 110-man roster. All those guys ain't playing. Why are you practicing guys that are never going to play?
That's a good question, I guess.
I mean, really, you think about it. It's no fault of the player, but it's like, this is why when we did, what I decided to do was on Sunday, have a developmental program.
There you go.
And on Sundays, what we did is the players that didn't dress, mm-hmm. that did not play,
mm-hmm.
I took them over there on Sunday when our team was working out and stretching and running.
Yep.
I took them over there and they ran the offense and the defense.
You know, Coach, we've been obsessing about that in the NFL. How do you develop a backup quarterback? And now the AAF looks like they're in some serious financial troubles and might not make it. And you got a team, you know, on your field in front of, like, you know, you got a 50, 60, 70,000 seat stadium. You got like 200 people watching the hot shots or whatever they're called. And you just realize, Coach, how do we get guys to be okay to play quarterback in the NFL if they're not really playing?
Well, you're right.
and you need a developmental league. I've said that for 15 years because once they leave the NFL, if they get cut and they're young players, where else can they hone their skills? They can't. Yeah. You know, every league, basketball has a league, baseball has a league, hockey, football does not. Well, how do you develop not only quarterbacks, but how about offensive linemen?
Sure.
How about young coaches?
Right.
How about new officials?
Right.
I mean,
right.
That's a developmental league. And as long as you understand that and you promote it to that, it's not the National Football League. It's a developmental league. And all other leagues have that. And fans actually go, okay, I'm okay with that because these could be the starters of the future. And I just think the more that we understand that, and especially, as you said, the quarterback, because you go as far as the quarterback goes. I mean, me and John were talking about that today. We're going, everybody. When you got a trigger, man, life's good. You sleep good on Saturday night.
Yeah, well, John's had some issues there, Coach. I'm not going to lie. He'd probably be the first to tell you. I mean, it's great when you got Peyton Manning, but, you know, it's been a struggle.
You know what? I think his mindset is you go get a Flacco, which has something to prove, has a chip on his shoulder. You have enough pieces, I think, on defense where – you know, you get them going back to that era when they were really rolling, and you got a quarterback that's pretty smart, won't turn it over. You give them a little bit of a running game, and you become this play-action team that they were in those glory days when they were really rolling, and all of a sudden you're back in the mix.
Mm. Well, we hope that's the case. By the way, speaking of quarterbacks, my son, the sophomore at ASU, said you got to ask Coach about Manny Wilkins. Because the quarterback at ASU, because he's not on a lot of people's radar in terms of being drafted. But I love watching Manny Wilkins. And, boy, I hope a team takes a chance on him. How'd he do today, and where's he at, Coach?
He did great. He had a nice session with those guys, completed all the passes, threw about 65 passes. And he's gonna be in somebody's camp, whether it be drafted late or signed as a free agent. Mm. And, look. Most quarterbacks in the National Football League are system needy. They need to be placed in a system that highlights their strengths. And I think if you're going to pick a Manny Wilkins, he's a guy that has some attributes, can throw the ball down the field pretty nicely, can move the pocket with him. You got a guy that can function. You know, and I think any team that understands the play of that quarterback, it's critical. Because they're system needy. You know, most of them aren't like John Elway or Tom Brady, you know, where they make you a better football team. It doesn't matter what system they play in. They make the parts around them better. I think most quarterbacks are system needy. If you can put some parts around them so they can play to their strength, that's how you build a football team.
Coach, such a thrill. We love the great words about N'Keal Harry. Just to compare him to Dez Bryant, that means a lot coming for you to frame it for Broncos fans out here. You got the team in a bowl game, got Coach Hurley getting in the tournament, Coach Smith on the baseball field as a top 10 team. I tell you what, Coach, it's rolling down there in the desert, man. We appreciate it, and we love it.
Well, we appreciate you guys. We're having fun. And, you know, the culture's all set by our AD, Ray Anderson, and our president, Dr. Phil. And it's exciting times. And I think it's like anything, you know, the coaches are only good as the players. And that's one thing about college football I've learned. You know, in pro football, you draft them. In college football, they pick you. So
right.
I hope the players pick us and want to come so we can continue to build our program.
And I got a promise from you to get in that curtain next year, right?
It's coming.
Okay.
They're starting to convince me.
Okay.
They're starting to convince me.
All right, Coach. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Coach.
Herm Edwards just said N'Keal Harry's Dez Bryant.
I heard it.
Would you like to have Dez Bryant on the Denver Broncos for the next 10 years?
Oh, yeah. What I heard that I liked is that he's super competitive. And wants that ball.
Yeah, there's a stat out there. It's something about competing for footballs, that sort of stat. And he had like the second highest success rate in competing for the ball. And DK Metcalf wasn't even on the list.
Yeah.
Now, my argument to that is DK Metcalf catches the same type of ball. He's breaking away from the defensive back. And
nah, not in the NFL, man.
Okay, all right.
He's not going to be able to bully everybody and the combine stuff in the NFL.
I'm definitely biased here, obviously. So I'm trying to be unbiased by my support of DK Metcalf. But trust me, I have loved watching N'Keal Harry for the past, you know, couple years. We're hearing from Herm Edwards. He would compare him to Dez Bryant. And you could probably get N'Keal Harry probably in the second round. Okay. I can move off Metcalf a little bit. I still think it might be a good idea. But I'm telling you, we got to keep our eyes open for this guy. Now, I've seen certain mocks where N'Keal does go in the first round late. But I've seen more that he's not in the first round at all.
Let me ask you this, D-Mac.
Yeah.
They call you from Broncos headquarters. They say, you know what?
Yeah.
We want you to do the draft. We're going to turn it all over to you, D-Mac.
Hey, guys. What's up?
What are you going to do? Who are you going to pick first? Are you going to trade that pick?
Washington Redskins. I'm telling you, we love a quarterback, Redskins. Smokescreen. Quarterback miss. Devin White, Devin Bush. I don't know. We really like, oh, you're going to give us that? Oh, okay. We got the number 15 pick. Denver Broncos, number 15, select DK Metcalf.
Ooh, there you go.
Sorry, N'Keal. I love you, though. And then it's later in the draft, and everybody thinks the Broncos are in bed. And it's like, hello, draft pick 29. I got something for you. So I got this capital. Want to get this pick? I'm going to give you this, that, the other thing. What? Oh, you're going to do that? Okay. Denver Broncos draft out of North Carolina State, Garrett Bradbury.
Whoa.
Starting center.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, wow. Here I am at the press conference. Well, we got two players who are going to be with the Denver Broncos for 10 years, and they're going to be both Ring of Famers. We just drafted our starting center, and now we have DK Metcalf, a burner. We believe Jake Butt is actually going to be really good for us, so it was tempting to take Hockenson. TJ Hockenson, but we feel like we could get players later on, and we really believe in Jake Butt, and we just couldn't pass on Metcalf. And then all year next year, and then Emmanuel Sanders is in the slot, or maybe we just cut Emmanuel Sanders.
Well, you have the power now, so what are you going to do?
Probably cut him. And I'm just going to put Deshaun Hamilton in the slot. That's why I drafted him. So my receiver, here's what my team
looks
like.
Two rookie receivers.
No.
Oh, no, no.
No, 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 no. No, one.
Yeah.
And he's going to run three routes. He's going to first year. I'm going to put him in a position to succeed, Nate, not fail. He's going to run a go route. He's going to run a slant. He's going to run a screen.
Well, you know your team, your opponents are going to know that.
That's fine.
No,
that's okay because I don't expect the world out of him. I expect maybe 40 catches or so. And Cortland Sutton's about to be a superstar. Cortland Sutton is about to catch 100 footballs this year.
You think so?
Yeah.
That's a lot of balls.
Deshaun Hamilton is going to catch 80 in the slot.
Wow.
And Tim Patrick is going to be a surprise guy who's going to catch another 30 footballs or so.
So that leaves about 20 for DK.
Yeah, something like that. It's going to be a learning curve for him. But he's going to scare people. And he's going to run fast down the field a lot. And so you're going to have to cover him. You're going to have to cover him. And all of a sudden, there's going to be mismatches in space for my tight ends and my slot guys and all that. And we're off and running, and Joe Flacco is going to be pumped. So it's not going to be a superstar year for DK Metcalf in the first year. But it's never superstar years for these wide receivers, really, in their first year.
No.
But I got a starting center now, too. So I got this guy who's going to improve my offense. I got a starting center, Garrett Bradbury, for the next decade, who I have a fifth-year option on. And guess what I'm going to do in the second round? The next day I'm going to wake up, just killed the draft. The Denver Broncos select Mac Wilson, linebacker out of Alabama.
There you
go. Inside linebacker. Not Devin White, but not that different than Devin Bush. Probably the third best inside linebacker in the draft, and I got my inside linebacker. You see what I just did there? I got you. I just did incredible. And then you say, well, what do you do with the rest of the draft? I don't know. Whatever. Auto draft. Just take the next best available athlete after that.
Auto draft.
Auto draft.
All right.
Fantasy man.
That's right.
Freaking auto draft. I got a trophy over there. That's D-Max Fantasy Championship Trophy. You see that?
It's a beautiful thing.
Auto draft.
Oh, really?
I didn't draft one player on that team.
That goes to show you, man. Pin the tail on the donkey.
Made some changes during the season.
Wow.
That's exactly what I would do.
I'm surprised your phone isn't ringing right now. Dove Valley.
They were out at the pro day today. Looking at a receiver. By the way, this Reynolds guy, Ren, they need a defensive tackle too. So if you can find somebody in the fourth or fifth round that sort of fits that bill, you're A-OK. In terms of the Broncos' ownership situation, the significance of arbitration, details next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
All right, it's The Drive. It's D-Mac with Nate Jackson. Great conversation with Herm Edwards, who compared N'Keal Harry to Dez Bryant. And should the Broncos make a move on a wide receiver? John Elway was at the ASU Pro Day today. So just keep it in mind as we move forward. The Broncos, Nate, had a big day yesterday, kind of after when we were off the air, because the comments from Roger Goodell came out about arbitration. And I know that the current Broncos, Joe Ellis and the Broncos, were happy about the announcement that arbitration has been going on for the past 30 to 40 days. I have been told time after time that Brittany Bolin is dialed in on what is to come in terms of being a future owner of the team. And it was announced that she will be leaving McKinsey, a huge consulting firm based out of Denver. McKinsey's like all over the place, but they've got an office, excuse me, and she's based out of Denver. She'll be leaving that at some point later this year and joining the Broncos in a management role sort of to be determined later. And they're not exactly sure, but it'll involve working at the Valley, working at the stadium, being involved with a lot of different elements, and that she is focused on what she needs to do to eventually become the owner. The arbitration announcement might be tough news for the Bill Bolin, Beth Bolin Wallace, Amy Klemmerkamp, which is currently suing to get the trust removed. So there's a lot of things going on at the same time here. And the judge, Judge Pratt, over here in Arapahoe County, made a couple of different rulings. He said, well, you know, the trust can get paid by the team, so that can continue. He said that the NFL should do arbitration on this matter and, you know, kind of police itself in terms of transfer. And the NFL is doing that. They're involved with that. Roger Goodell confirmed it. But he also said, you can proceed with your lawsuit against the trust to try to remove the trust. There's enough grounds to continue that. Pretty complicated situation, right?
Yeah.
But I think both sides could sort of say, hey, it's a win for us. I mean, you know, there's probably a way for both to say it. But I think at the end of the day, this ultimately was a better deal for Joe Ellis and company and ultimately Brittany Bolin. And probably a more secure pathway for Brittany to take over the team. Now, when is that? I'm just stuck on this like 3-year thing, because at the end of 3 years, John Elway's contract's up, Joe Ellis's contract is up, the CBA, you'll have to negotiate a new labor deal,
which is going to be a contentious, incredibly complicated process for everybody.
Yeah, clearly you should anticipate some sort of lockout previously to what happened 10 years ago. Right. I would anticipate it,
and actually that's going to be a great learning experience for Brittany to be around for that,
but not in charge of it.
Well,
or not shepherding the Broncos through it.
Correct.
That would be a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't think she wants that. I don't think anybody wants that.
No, I don't think the NFL owners would want it. I think they would want, they all got to come together on this one.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the fans, what does this mean? Not a lot. I think there is the terrifying possibility if you're in a win-now mode and it goes south, like, it doesn't work out. Joe Flacco doesn't work out. You don't have a developmental quarterback. The coaching staff is out of touch. Scangarello doesn't get it together. Fangio just really should be a defensive coordinator. If we really want to go glass half empty, Nate.
That's like glass full empty, right? That's just right. The broken glass on the floor you just described.
Well, in 3 years, it could be pretty ugly. I mean, in 3 years, if you turn around and you don't have a quarterback, your coach didn't work out, you're through a lockout where you don't get, which happened, by the way, when Coach Fox got the job, the year you were out the door. You know, Coach Fox got hired, he had no team.
Yeah.
The players had to wear tape on their helmets with their names.
Really?
Yep. And yes, there was Tim Tebow with a piece of tape on his helmet saying Tebow. Which, of course, we all thought was pretty funny because it's
you all knew who he was. Well, he wanted to be one of the guys. Well, I mean, in quotes.
Mm. So, I think this is a win for... I think we see what's about to happen. I think the lawsuit will continue. But I think they'll just drag it out, Nate. I think they'll just drag it out. And at some point, they'll just name Brittany the person. And they'll say there'll be a transition period through the CBA. And Joe will just mentor Brittany. So she'll get named. Like, the trust will be done. Like, their job will be complete. Because the part of their job is to find the successor to Pat Bowlen. Mm. And this is a long time.
How many people make up the trust?
Three people.
Mm.
Joe Ellis, Rich Slivka, and Mary Kelly.
And all they want is what's best for the organization, right? I think the answer is yes.
It's Game of Thrones, buddy. I don't know. I guess. It's complicated when it's Game of Thrones. There's a lot of power in Game of Thrones.
That's right.
What does anybody want in Game of Thrones?
Power.
Do they really want the best for the people, or do they want to keep the Ice Dragon away and, you know, be the king of the Lord of the North, or I don't know, whatever. Game of Thrones is tricky, dude. I mean, yeah, we're going to tell the people certain things, but what's really going on here?
That exists in every industry, though.
What's Khaleesi really doing here? You know, what's Khaleesi's really big game plan? I don't know. It's a tricky question.
Either way, we're going to be playing football games.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But what you don't want is you don't want an unstable situation that would deter people from coming here. But so far, we haven't really seen that.
Yeah.
So far, Fangio said he wasn't fazed by it. So far, it was fine by Joe. Well, Joe Flacco was traded here, so he wasn't really a free agent.
I really think the fan base is more of an attraction for players than the ownership.
You know what's awesome about having you here? Just, you're a great guy, first of all. But when you come here, you tell stories of how this organization is, how they're viewed, what your perception is. And it's pretty positive.
Because that was my experience. 100%. They took care of us. On the field and off the field. They wanted us to succeed. And they knew that, you know, you don't just throw these guys out on the field and they're going to play well. You got to take care of them and look out for them.
So maybe a little bit of that's been lost just over the past couple of years. I mean, they are 11-21 over the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You never went through that in your time here.
No, we had winning. Winning seasons.
Did you ever have a losing season when you were here with the Broncos?
I think we might have gone 7-9 the last year, and that was the end.
7-9.
Yeah. But maybe not. Maybe we're 8-8. But we were never bad. I mean, we're always competitive.
Right.
We always believed we were going to win.
Right. Well, Cutler never got to the playoffs, but I don't think you were 7. I think it was, gosh, I could have sworn
it was 9-7. I don't think we went 7-9.
No, I don't think so either.
No.
But they just went 6-10 after going 5-11.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had double-digit losing seasons for the first time since the 60s.
Right.
I mean, it's different. But let's get back to what, you know, at least to where you guys were.
Yeah. I think we're on track for that.
This is The Drive on the Fan.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Appreciate you listening, Steemac, with Nate Jackson. That was cool talking to Herm Edwards.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Entertaining, enthusiastic. It'd be fun to play for him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a lot of people questioned what he would do, you know, going back to college. But if you love coaching, you love coaching. You know, it's exciting, top to bottom. We'll see what the Broncos do. Here's John Elway about getting ready for the draft.
It really comes about patience and doing the homework before you get to the draft and be ready to go once you get in the draft. That you know, just stay true to your board, and you know, because all the time that all the scouts, and we're so fortunate in the fact that our scouting department, they do such a great job and really get the great information for us to put it all together for us to be able to pick the next best Denver Bronco. And so I'm very grateful for them. I think, you know, we continue to do the best we can, do all the work we can, to, so you know, when it comes to April 25th, we'll be ready to make that pick.
It's a big one. So many different directions they could go. Boy, if they draft a quarterback, I tell you what, guys. Oh, my God. Can you guys imagine if they actually draft a quarterback?
Your head's going to explode.
My head will explode. I mean, I'll love it. So don't get me wrong. Like, through all these conversations we're having, Nate, if they really did draft a quarterback, I would be excited. Because it sort of works into my whole, you know, Glennon Trubisky doctrine anyways, about having a placeholder sort of veteran making, you know, $18, $22 million a year, and then having a guy in developing under him. And then that guy cycles out, and then you get the next guy. So, I mean, I think that's the way to go.
But not this year.
I mean, until you really know you have Patrick Mahomes, I'd say any year's a year to do it. But I'm trying to look at things through this three-year window, and I just don't know why you would do it. And because it makes absolutely positively no sense, it might happen. Do you hear what Orlando's going to do if they draft a quarterback at 10?
Tattoo
mm-hmm.
of the guy's initials
mm-hmm.
in the color of his school.
Yeah.
Well, that's not very wise. Unless he wants a tattoo. Because you never know who they're going to pick. You really don't.
I mean, it does.
But he's got a lot of tattoos, so it doesn't really matter. It's not like his first tattoo. Did he say where he's going to put it?
I don't think so.
I think the location matters here.
Just put it like right on his like neck or something. So everybody can see it.
Yeah.
No, that's a good one, man.
Yeah, that's a bold statement.
It's a bold statement. It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it works out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it could be cool depending on, you know, your tattooist.
It was funny because, like, somebody around here was, like, saying to Orlando, hey, I got a tattoo guy. He'll do it for you. I was like, you realize, like, Orlando made, like, $30 million in his NFL career. You know, like, he's probably all right swinging the cash for the tattoo.
Yeah, but when you're an NFL player, even a former player, to some extent, people want to give you free stuff.
Yeah, I just, you know, the pride that we had somebody bumping around here about their tattoo connection was, I'm not saying Orlando wouldn't take, well, actually, hold on, you shouldn't take a free tattoo. Who's giving out free tattoos anyway?
People who don't have a lot of experience.
Yeah. No, it's like, no, dude, I want to overpay for my tattoo from the best tattoo artist here in Denver. It's okay.
Well, you got to start somewhere, and there could be a budding young artist who doesn't have a lot of experience. But
I got you. But if you're running cheap on things, you want to go cheap on tattoos?
Nah, you don't. That's a good point. Can't rub that off.
By the way, I was getting all sorts of clarification about cheerleaders and my cheerleader philosophy.
Well, that's good.
About how good the Broncos treat their cheerleaders.
And what'd you learn?
I'm told by the Broncos we pay them on par with Broadway dancers. Well, every hour they work, practice, game appearance, even social media, they are compensated! Exclamation mark.
Sounds good.
No mistreatment of Denver Broncos cheerleaders here.
All right. Does that change your mind?
No. But I'm glad they're treated well here.
They like it.
Apparently it's like the Raiders cheerleaders were the worst from that Real Sports special.
Well, yeah, of course, it depends on the coach and the situation on the team. Yeah, they filed the lawsuit, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
Sure, there are some bad conditions for some of those cheerleader squads.
I mean, it sounded bad to be a Raiderette.
Look, I imagine even on the good squads, there are some bad elements to it. These girls are held to a pretty impossible standard as far as, you know, what their bodies are going to look like.
If you want to have the majority of them, how about this? How about a compromise? How about a compromise? If you want to have all the dancer thing, go ahead. But how about leaving 10 spots, 10 cheerleader spots that is just the general public, and you just get to be a cheerleader?
No, man.
10 spots. And it just is for fans that want to be on the field or go to charity events who give them a quiz so they have to know a ton about the Broncos. And you just they're just down there. There's 10 of them.
They got to pass the dance test too,
no,
right?
No, you don't have to pass the dance test.
All right, well, you
there's
put
no
those...
dance. It's a random drawing for those that qualify based on their Broncos knowledge.
And you put those 10 in a little group and you put them off to one side.
No.
They don't get to mingle with the professionals.
No. You split them up.
No,
there's
dude.
Four sectors of cheerleaders in the stadium.
Right. And just... what, a couple of those
yes.
those winners in each of the groups? No, then the whole each group looks
what?
Disheveled. No, we need to have uniformity, man.
Oh, because God forbid the drunk guy in the fifth row who's screaming at the cheerleaders the whole game sees a disheveled unit out there.
That's right.
Okay. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, man.
All right. Richie, Kistner, John, we're going on Facebook Live. We're doing some Facebook Live. All right, we'll be there for a second. Y'all have a great day. You live in the best state. In the world. Does that make sense? Best state in the world?
Oh, yeah.
Drive Reloaded coming up next. We'll see you.
Later.